Hello and welcome to Amateur Radio Topics. I'm Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey, and in today's episode I'd really like to talk about wire beams. So by now you may have built a wire antenna, you may have built a dipole for example for one or more of the HF bands, and you're looking to get a bit more gain. Now there's quite a few wire beam antenna kits available on the market, such as Spider Beam, or the Hex Beam, or the Moxon type beams. All of these antennas are available, you can buy them in kit form, they all work really well, and they all provide you with a degree of gain. But there's no real reason why you can't build your own wire beam. It's quite easy to do, and if you have limited space, or you have limited height, or you don't wish to put up an aluminium type beam, which might upset your neighbours, a wire beam is ideal. Sometimes all you need is really a couple of handily placed trees or part of the house, or maybe a small mast. It's not actually that difficult to configure a wire beam antenna for the HF bands. And when I say the HF bands, I really mean 20, 15 and 10, but it's not so difficult to put one up for 40 meters as well. And at the moment with the low sunspot numbers, 40 meters is really quite an attractive band. Some really good DX to be worked on 40 meters, and having a beam antenna will make a big difference. So essentially, with the wire beam antenna, you're looking at either introducing another element. So this can be a reflector, and the reflector is behind the dipole in the direction of the intended signal, or you can configure the arrangement so that you have a director. The reflector arrangement tends to be a little bit more popular. And this is mainly because a director tends to be a little bit more close spaced in a two element wire beam, and that certainly seems to affect the feed point impedance more than a well spaced reflector. So we'll concentrate on the reflector version, but certainly wouldn't discount the director idea if you're a little bit short on space and it's the only way you can do it. We could probably use maybe a 40 meter dipole as an example. If you start with a 40 meter dipole and add another element to this, you'll end up with a two element beam for 40 meters. And of course, if it's a wire beam and it's fixed, it will only really work in one direction. But there's a couple of really neat ways to try and make this into a reversible antenna so you can fire in two directions. And that would give you some front to back ratio. And it also will help with interference from other directions, from the side and from the back, the signals will be reduced. So it just depends a little bit on your location, but sometimes a two-element wire beam that can fire in either direction is a really useful antenna. And then if you get really serious and you want to enhance your signal in other directions, you can put a second antenna up, maybe at right angles to the first one. So now these antennas are not that hard to build. Essentially, the reflector at a nominal spacing is normally longer than the driven element. Now, the spacing is not too critical. It can be anything from around about 0.125 of a wavelength up to around about 0.3 of a wavelength behind the driven element. And this will work quite well. The spacing will affect the feed point impedance of the dipole. So this will in turn affect your SWR. But as we discussed in the last episode, don't worry too much about this at this stage. Let's try and get an arrangement where you can actually get some gain in the preferred direction. Now putting the element behind the dipole at a nominal distance will give you two things. It will give you some gain over a dipole. It eliminate the signal from the rear of the dipole, so to speak. It will enhance the signal in the direction that you want, and it also lowers the angle of radiation. So there's lots of positive things about having a two-element beam. And obviously it's nice to be able to get the antenna up as high as possible. If you can get to a half wavelength above the ground, whether it's for 40 meters, 20, 15 or 10, that's a good target to work to at this stage. And what tends to happen then, if you model this arrangement, you will find that the angle of radiation then drops down to around about 25 to 30 degrees above the horizon. So that's quite useful, because all of a sudden it puts you into a situation where you've got far more chance to work dx. If you just have a normal dipole, half wavelength above the ground, the angle of radiation won't be quite as low as that. It's probably going to be more like 35 to 40 degrees, but with a couple of decent lobes either side of the antenna, it will still work quite well. Having the extra element makes a huge difference in terms of enhancing the signal and lowering the angle of radiation. And as I mentioned, it may also affect the feed point impedance of the driven element, but that's not really too much of a concern at this stage. The main issue is trying to get the signal to go where you want it to go. So let's say hypothetically you have a mast, or you have a couple of handily placed trees. You've got to find a way to try and configure this second element. And this is where it pays to be a little bit creative with how this, you can achieve this. Quite often, if you've got a couple of trees and they're spaced the right kind of distance apart and they're in the right direction, then this can be really useful. If you don't have a couple of trees but you have a mast, then sometimes it's a question of trying to configure a short boom on that mast. And sometimes you can't always make the antenna as perfect as you would like it. But over the years, I've built a number of two element wire beams. Some of them have been more along the lines of maybe a two element wire beam supported on spreaders in a horizontal format, such as the Moxon design, or something like the hex beam design, or at the moment I use a spider beam for 2015 and 10, which is a really good antenna. The spider beam is a great antenna. It's three elements on 20, three elements on 15, and four elements on 10 meters. And you can choose either to feed all the elements together, or you can feed the elements separately, separate coaxial lines. That works quite well. And certainly with my current version of the spider beam, which I've remodeled, I get a very good front to back and front to side ratio. Front to back's around about 20-25 dBs, and the front to side is in excess of 30 dBs. So it's obviously working. Not much on 10 meters at the moment to really work on in terms of testing out the front to back, but certainly on 20 and 15 I've really been quite impressed with the new model that I've developed for that antenna. And that's just by using modeling software, EasyNEC, and just playing around and trying to optimize the element spacing and the element dimensions. That's a really useful tool. But maybe you don't have that tool. Maybe you just like to build something cut from formula. So let's just say hypothetically you've got your dipole. You'd like to put an element behind it. And as a rule of thumb, if you put a reflector up and let's say it's 0.15 wavelengths behind the driven element, typically you will need to make that parasitic element or the reflector element around about 5% longer than the driven element. Now, it's not cast in stone. It's actually, there are a few other factors you have to take into account, but 5% is a good thing to aim for. So the parasitic element will resonate at a lower frequency. And if you've got an antenna analyzer, you can put up the parasitic element first and you can test out that you've got it resonating at a frequency that's 5% lower than the driven element. Now, there's a few factors that come into play here. If, for example, you put your parasitic element 0.25, which is a quarter wavelength, behind the driven element, generally speaking, you only need to make that parasitic element self-resonant at that frequency. Because at 0.25 of a wavelength, if you do the modeling, you'll see that the parasitic element will be self-resonant. So it doesn't need to be 5% longer. It only needs to be longer if your spacing is less than 0.25 of a wavelength. And generally speaking, that's how these beams are configured. Normally, the spacing of a reflector as opposed to the driven element is normally about 0.15, can even make it 0.125. So just hypothetically, if you were talking about 40 meters and it was 0.125 a wavelength, looking around about 16 feet or 5 meters behind the driven element. And under those circumstances, yes, definitely the reflector will be somewhere around 5% longer. Now, it's not so critical, and the modeling software does help, but if you don't have modeling software, there's quite a few useful formulas that you can use to put yourself in the ballpark. Obviously, with a wire beam, if you've got it fixed in one direction, you can't really rotate it and figure out whether or not you're getting good front to back and all that sort of thing. But there's also some neat tricks that you can employ to switch the direction of the beam, to switch it from one direction to the other. And it's really not that hard to do. It just involves using certain lengths of coax and a double pole, double throw relay, and you have a really simple reversible beam. Now, the elements don't have to be horizontal to the ground. They can be inverted V. I've currently got a two element fixed wire beam facing towards Europe, and the apex is up at around about 75 feet and the ends drop down to around about 50 feet or 55 feet. And I feed each element with coaxial line, and the coaxial line is cut to a certain length. And this certain length helps to introduce an inductive component at the center of the unused element. So if I switch in one direction, the driven element is obviously, I'm feeding the driven element, and the parasitic element has an inductive reactance present at the center, which then helps to turn that parasitic element into a reflector. And you flick the switch and it fires back the other way. And the difference is very good. I've got this 40 meter two element fixed wire beam on a 20 foot or 6 meter long boom, fires towards Europe, and in the other direction it fires, well, you could say Europe on the long path, but it fires towards Caribbean and the rest of Australia and New Zealand. It's quite useful in the other direction on occasions. So I can see, just by flicking a switch there, I can see 20-25 dBs front to back quite easily, sometimes more in the preferred direction. And the preferred direction normally for me is Europe. Now and again, from VK6, you can work Europe on the long path on 40 meters. Probably more likely to happen now at this stage of the sunspot cycle. But the preferred direction tends to be short path to Europe. And so this is a pretty useful antenna. It cuts down the interference off the sides and gives me a really good signal into Europe. Now you can scale that. You can scale that obviously for 20 meters, for example. You could have an antenna and it doesn't need to be quite as high. You could have something that's 35 or 40 foot up, around about 10, 12 meters in the air, the end sloped down, inverted V fashion. And you can employ this same trick with two coaxial lines of a certain length. And when one of the coaxial lines is open, the specific length of this line will show an inductive reactance at the center of the parasitic element. And you flick them backwards and forwards by using a relay. It's a really neat arrangement. It's a very simple way to get a two-directional fixed wire beam. No rotators involved, no heavy aluminium elements. It just works well. There is one thing about inverting the elements. If they become an inverted V configuration, effectively to get resonance on the chosen band, you will find that the wire elements will need to be a little bit longer. So again, if you've got modeling software, this is something that you can figure out. If you don't have modeling software, then it's a little bit cut and try. And for years, I would build my wire antennas to formula, leave them a little bit longer than what they probably needed to be, and then just cut and try, just to figure out where, you know, how they would perform best just by trial and error. And that always used to be the way. The modeling software saves a lot of time, as does an antenna analyzer, but you don't actually, you know, it's not imperative. You don't actually have to have one. You can work all this out otherwise. So if you want to try and build this fixed wire beam and you'd like to have it switched in two directions, probably a couple of useful things you need to know. Essentially, if you have a quarter wavelength of coaxial cable feeding the antenna, plus, for example, a 1/8 wavelength piece of coax, so you have a quarter wavelength plus a 1/8 wavelength, then, and you leave the 1/8 wavelength open at the end, so open at the relay end, when you flip backs and forwards, parasitic elements being driven, the parasitic element is open on the coax end, you will find that the quarter wave plus the 1/8 wave, the combination of that will give you a certain reactive inductance at the feed point. Now, I say, well, what will that be? What will it give us? What will it turn it into? So if you're using 50 ohm coax and you have a quarter wave length of coax, whatever you do at the end of that quarter wave length of coax will invert at the feed point. So if at the end of the quarter wave coax you then place a 1/8 wavelength length of coax, the characteristic impedance of that coax would be 50 ohms. And if you leave it open at the far end, connected up to the quarter wave connects to your antenna, you effectively get an inductive reactance at the feed point impedance, because the 1/8 wavelength piece of coax is left open at the far end. So you'd say, well, that's, if it's open, it's got to be capacitive. And the trick here is that the quarter wavelength piece of coax inverts the capacitive reactance, turns it into inductive reactance at the feed point. So at the feed point of your parasitic element, it creates another 50 ohms of inductive reactance. And that's enough to turn your parasitic element into a reflector. It's a really neat way to do things. Now, in my case, with my 2-element 40 meter inverted V beam, having on 40 meters, having a quarter wavelength and a 1/8 wavelength is not long enough to get the coax down to the control box where the relays are further down the tower. So then the next thing is, well, how do we solve this problem? So we solve the problem by introducing a half wavelength of coax. So effectively, you have a half wavelength of coax. Now, with a half wavelength of coax, whatever impedance you have at one end, if the feed point impedance is 50 ohms at the top of the antenna, at the end of a half wavelength of coax, it will be 50 ohms. It repeats every half wavelength. So half a wavelength, one wavelength, one and a half wavelengths. And this is true for all coaxial cables. Now, I use RG213 or RG8 to feed these antennas. It's nominal 50 ohms. So on my particular antenna for 40 meters, I've got a half wavelength of coax, I've got a quarter wavelength of coax, and I've followed that by a 1/8 length of coax. And that combination gets my coaxial line down towards the bottom of my 75 foot tower, where I have a control box with double pole, double throw relays, flick of a switch, and I can switch these antennas backwards and forwards. So the thing you have to work out, of course, is that, okay, so you've got coaxial cable, cut it to half wavelength, quarter wavelength, 1/8 wavelength. But of course, with coaxial cable, it has a velocity factor. Now, RG213 has a velocity factor of 0.66. So you have to make the calculation. Now, there's plenty of these calculators on the net. You can go on the net and you can punch in wavelength calculator, coaxial cable, and it will come up with something that will enable you to work out what these lengths of coax should be. For example, on 40 meters, you end up with a length of coax, including the half wavelength and the quarter wavelength and the 1/8 wavelength, you end up with something around about 81 feet, 81.2 feet, somewhere around there, around about 24.73 meters of coax down towards my control box. So when I've switched the antenna backwards and forwards and I leave the parasitic element coax open, there's at the center of the antenna, it's introducing 50 ohms of inductive reactance, which helps a lot, because that turns my parasitic element into a very nice reflector. And then when I flick the switch, it goes back the other way, and what was the parasitic element becomes the driven element. And it's a very easy arrangement to configure. But if you, obviously if you're doing this on 20 meters, these dimensions will change. There'll be half the dimensions we're discussing. And it's much easier to configure it on 20 meters. For example, if you had the just a quarter wavelength plus the 1/8 wavelength on 20 meters, you'd be looking at something around about 17.5 or 18 feet down to a control box. So around about 5.5 meters, something like that. And that will achieve what you need to in terms of introducing that inductive reactance at the center of the feed point of the parasitic element. So this is the simplest way I've found to build a two element fixed wire beam. You can apply it to, obviously if you had a rotatable beam, you could even apply it to a rotatable beam and you could have instant switching from one direction to another. That is also possible. It also works with two element cubicle quads. I've used it with the quad antenna as well. And the 50 ohms of inductive reactance is enough to turn the quad parasitic element into a nice reflector. And again, you can model this and you can, by using EasyNEC, you can have a look at the effects of introducing the inductive reactance or the capacitive reactance if you wish. If you wish to turn it into director, you can do that as well. So to turn it into a director, you have a different sort of relay switching system at the bottom. And instead of leaving the coax open at the bottom, you would close the coax up. So effectively that 1/8 wavelength, which has the characteristic impedance of the coax, 50 ohms, you would close that up. It effectively looks like an inductor. The quarter wavelength transposes this and turns it into capacitive reactance. And the half wavelength you might need to get back up to the top of the tower just repeats that impedance. Half wavelength, one and a half wavelength always repeats the impedance. This is why some people say, look, you need to put your dipole up or your beam up or whatever, and you need to feed it with a multiple of half wavelength of coax. Now, that can be easier said than done. You know, if we use 40 meters as an example, a half wavelength of RG213 is around about 47 feet or around about 16 meters. And that may not be long enough to get the coax to your shack. Then you've got to add another half a wavelength. So then you're looking at maybe a whole wavelength. So you're something around about 92 feet or 32 meters, somewhere around that figure, that will get it back to the shack. And if you do that, the impedance that you see at your transmitter will be the same impedance that you've got at the feed point of the antenna, because the half wavelength or the full wavelength or the 1.5 wavelength will always repeat. Now, if you're building multiband antennas, this gets a bit tricky, obviously, because you're not going to have the right length of coax for every single frequency. But this is a good rule of thumb. And obviously, on the HF bands, a lot of frequencies repeat, you know, 3.5, 7, 14, 28, etc. So you can choose your length of coax wisely to get a good indication of what your feed point impedance might be. And of course, with coaxial cable, you have to remember there is a velocity factor. So if you have RG213, RG8, the velocity factor is going to be 0.66. So if you do the calculation, there's a simple calculation you can do to work out a half wavelength of coax. It's in feet, it's 492 over the frequency. So 492 divided by 7, multiplied by 0.66 will give you around about 46.5 feet as your half electrical half wavelength for the coax. You must take the velocity factor into account. And it's the same essentially if you're looking at building dipoles. There's another quite well used formula, which is 468 over the frequency for the element length in feet, and that takes into account the end wire effect. So even a single wire has got some sort of velocity factor, normally about 0.95, and this takes the 468 over the frequency in feet, takes that into account. If you're trying to do the calculation in meter, it's 142.6 over the frequency equals how many meters you need to build a half wavelength dipole. So all these formulas are fairly useful. Obviously, there's no shortage of information on the internet that will help you to use these formulas, but these formulas have been around for a long time. There's nothing new about any of these formulas, and there's nothing new about any of this theory, really. It's just a way of trying to configure it. If you can, obviously, if you can put up a fixed wire beam, it's going to help enormously with your signal. You get a few dBs of gain. You might get 4 to 5 dBs of gain with the two element antenna, plus you get a lowering of the angle of radiation. So it's more than just getting the gain of the dipole. It's lowering the angle of radiation makes a huge difference, and also it does help with cutting down interference, as I mentioned. So this should give you something to play around with in terms of trying to configure a fixed wire antenna. You can certainly build something fairly simply, and you can build something on an experimental basis to see how it works. I'd really encourage you to try and introduce a switching system. Try and introduce the coaxial switching system with a couple of relays, and this will help you to understand how much gain or how much potential benefit this is. It's quite hard if you just put up a fixed wire beam, you put the parasitic element behind it, you cut it a little bit longer, maybe do the modeling. You've got no real reference point. For quite a while here, I had a two element wire beam for 80 meters. Probably wasn't quite as high as it should have been. And I didn't bother trying to switch that in the other direction. I just had an arrangement where I disabled the parasitic element so I could use the 80 meter dipole more or less as an omnidirectional antenna. And certainly there seemed to be some gain. Again, I had it focused on Europe and it seems to work quite well, but I never went to the trouble of actually reversing that antenna. And probably something I should have done, because it helps you to understand and enhance the performance of the antenna. If you've got no way of reversing the antenna, you've got no real way of understanding what the front to back ratio may be, or even the gain or the benefit of lowering the angle of radiation. So this might give you some ideas about what you can do with a fixed wire beam. As I mentioned, you can actually introduce these techniques to a rotary antenna as well. But generally speaking, with fixed wire beams, you're trying to put something up which is probably not too difficult, not going to take up too much space. 40 meters is achievable, even if you can't quite get to the heights that I've got here with my towers. You can certainly get something up for 40 meters that's maybe 40 meters in the air, sorry, 40 feet in the air, 12 or 13 meters up, which will help. It's certainly, I think the first wire beam I ever built for 40 meters, I think it was only up at around about 30, 35 feet, and it definitely made a difference. It definitely helped to enhance the signal. So I found these antennas to be more effective than maybe playing around with vertical type antennas. I've got a lot of trees on this block. I have used vertical antennas. I particularly played around a bit on 80 and 160 with vertical antennas, but haven't had so much success with the verticals, even with parasitic elements, as I've had with horizontally polarized antennas. But that might just be the location I'm in. Quite high up here, but a lot of trees, a lot of stuff in the way, and the horizontally polarized antennas always seem to work a little bit better for me. That's just my experience. So I think that probably just about wraps up this episode. You will find some information eventually on my website, which is zigzagwest.com. If you've got any questions, you can send them through to hamradiotopics@gmail.com. You can certainly subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, or you can leave a review if you wish on your app of choice. And until next time, I wish you 73s And all the best from Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey.